Welcome to the Love You Mentory, a podcast dedicated to finding out the truth behind what creates deeply passionate, connected, lasting love. In every episode, I sit down with one of the most amazing couples, love experts, or authors in the country and discuss the nitty-gritties of what really happens inside the most incredible relationships. We dive into the good times and the bad, the sickness and the health, the richer and the poorer, and how each couple has created their own version of true love. My hope is that you take something from every one of these stories that can help you love more fully, deeply, and passionately. I'm your host, Nate Bagley, and I am so glad that you are listening right now. You guys, it's here. It's finally here. John and Julie Gottman of the Gottman Institute. I sat down with them about a week and a half ago and interviewed them, and it was so amazing. It was right before my birthday. It was like the best birthday present I ever could have had. Thank you so much to Michael Fulweiler for setting up the interview. It's amazing how when you do something long enough, windows of opportunity open up, and I feel so lucky to have been able to interview several of my heroes on this podcast, and in this particular instance, John and Julie are kind of like the icing on the cake. I loved interviewing them. They were here in Salt Lake City for a workshop for the weekend, and I got to go to their hotel room and sit down with them for an hour and just shoot the breeze and talk about the things that we're most passionate about, which is how to create amazing, lasting love. I really hope you enjoy this episode. I'm so glad that I got to record it and to interview them. And a lot of what they talked about in their workshops over the weekend is included in this podcast. So it's kind of like a condensed version of what they're teaching the thought leaders and the front runners and the people like the therapists and the counselors. This is what they're teaching people to teach others so that they have and counsel others and so that they have amazing relationships. So you guys are getting it directly from the source, which is really cool. One thing I would really love for you to do if you like this episode would be to share it with your friends and then go to iTunes and rate it and leave a review. It would mean a lot to me if you would do that. I'm so grateful that you listened today. Hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. I love you guys a lot. Thanks for tuning in. Well, welcome.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, John and Julie Gottman, so excited to have you guys here.
Thank you, Nate.
Thanks for inviting me into your hotel room to talk to you.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I just have so many questions, I don't even know where to start, to be honest with you. Can you tell me why you think your research is so important for modern couples?
Great question.
Thanks.
Sure, baby.
Try that first. It's so important for modern couples because so many myths have been spun out in the culture. So lots of popular TV shows, radio shows, etc., have perpetuated a lot of myths about couples. For example, you have to be completely compatible in order to have a good relationship. You have to be able to really love yourself before you can have a relationship. Those are all myths. Actually. So the wonderful thing about John's research is that he started with a blank slate to really let couples reveal what was the truth.
It's because I was really dumb. I was clueless about relationships. Went from one disaster to another.
I can start
research recognizing your ignorance, which was enormous.
It keeps you curious.
That's right.
That's awesome.
It does. So, you know, in the research, we were analyzing hundredth of a second by hundredth of a second, not only what couples do on the outside in terms of what they speak, how they look, what their face is showing emotion, but also measuring physiology in terms of reactions to each other, like heart rate, perspiration,
sweat,
things like that. And then following those couples for as long as 20 years to find out what happened. And in the analyses then, looking at the patterns that predicted what would happen to couples later on, which really told us the truth of what was going on for couples, what worked and what didn't.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the research is useful because I've kept track of my hypotheses over time. I'm wrong 60% of the time. Mm. And if I didn't do the research, I think I was right 100% of the time. You know? And
right.
So doing the research keeps you from being arrogant and thinking you know everything.
When's the time you've been found? What's one of the findings that you found that surprised you the most?
The thing that surprised me the most was that the people I had really great relationships were very calm with each other and very kind and considerate with one another. And I kind of expected that the great relationships, there'd be this sort of electrical storm of passion and romance, and there'd be fire, and you know, and it wasn't the case. It was really people who were calm and comfortable with each other and very kind and considerate toward one another had the best relationships.
Kindness is so underappreciated, I
right.
think.
That's right. I think the thing that surprised me the most, and actually there are two things that were really relieving to me. One was that 69% of all problems that couples struggle over are perpetual problems. They never go away. They're never solved. That is amazing and a great relief. They are based in lifestyle choices. They're based in personality differences. Those kinds of things that we collide up against when we are matched with someone else.
Why was that a great relief?
That was,
I mean,
a great relief.
It could be
relief.
Depressed.
Yeah, I love
it. I know. Well, because it meant that just because we were arguing over, you know, cleaning up the books about once a week,
yeah,
every week for the rest of our lives,
right,
didn't mean that we were a bad relationship. It meant we were a perfectly normal relationship. That was great news.
We had a perpetual problem.
Yes, we still do, and we always will. But that's fine.
Yeah.
My husband is, as he describes it, I'm obsessively, compulsively neurotic, i.e. tidy, and he is charmingly sloppy. Right?
So, you know, Andy Christensen at UCLA talks about the importance of accepting one another, you know, and really, you know, really realizing that you're in this for a lifetime, and, you know, these things don't matter very much. These differences don't matter very much, you know. And
they really don't.
And you emphasize what's positive in your partner's character and personality and celebrate that and cherish that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I was talking to an interesting couple the other day, and I said, you know, what advice would you give to me? And they said, marry kind.
Aww.
If you could do anything, marry kind. And they said, you know, a lot of the couples that are dating that they talk to, they'd tell them to, like, read an etiquette book together.
Yeah.
And just, like, learn to say your please and thank yous.
Yeah.
Because it's, anyway.
Kindness and generosity
yeah.
is what one reporter said, you know, summarizing our research. And I think there's a lot of truth in that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of making relationships work.
So if you could go back in time and talk to your single selves, or talking to me, a single man, what advice would you give me to prepare for an awesome dynamic relationship like yours, or like those that you describe in your research?
Well, you know, I would like to answer that first, because I've thought a lot about that. What advice would I give my younger self?
Yeah.
And the major advice I'd give myself is bail out sooner. If you're in a crappy relationship, get out of there sooner instead of hanging in there and trying to make it work. In other words, you said kindness, and we said kindness and generosity. If you're not being treated well, you know, pull a plug and get out of there. If you're not better with this person than you ordinarily are, get out. Look for a relationship where you're at your best self, and, you know, and you enjoy the love you receive. That would be my advice to my younger self.
Mm.
What about you?
That's good. You know, I think it would be, especially for women, it would be make sure that you're speaking your needs, and your needs are being at least listened to. At least listened to.
That's a good one.
And hopefully turned towards in terms of the partner wanting to fulfill your needs to some degree, at least. One of the big mistakes I think that women make is that they are nurturers. You know, we are socially trained to be nurturers. So we go into relationship looking to nurture our partner, but oftentimes we neglect what nurturing we may need. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that really builds trust in a relationship is speaking your needs. That's an important thing for women to learn how to do instead of shutting them down. And then seeing how their partner responds, seeing where their partner actually wants to be with them. And that really reflects the research, because what we found in the research was that with successful couples, they turned towards each other's bids for connection 86% of the time on average. Mm. And couples who were really unhappy and ended up splitting up turned towards each other 33% of the time, you know, way lower.
Yeah, it's not zero, but it's pretty low.
It's marginal.
That's right.
Sort of, and a bid is asking for your partner's attention, asking for your partner's interest, excitement, mm-hmm. playfulness together, lovemaking. You know, any attempt to really connect with one another. Mm. And I've really been asked this question, like, summarize all of your 43 years of research in one sentence. And my sentence is that in a great relationship, it's as if people have a motto. And the motto is, when you're hurting, baby, the world stops and I listen. Non-defensively. And in bad relationships, the motto appears to be, when you're hurting, baby, go somewhere else because I don't want to hear it. You know, yeah. Come to me when you're happy and cheerful, mm-hmm. and then I'm interested in you. But at your negative, go away. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the real major difference.
Yeah, so talking, that goes along with the bids and turning towards or away from your partner.
Exactly.
I was talking with Laura Heck the other day, and we were talking about, I think it's called negative sentiment override.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what advice would you give to people who are in a committed relationship? They're married, they're really committed, but they're in a place right now where they have that negative sentiment override, or where their bids are not being received very well, that like they're just really hypersensitive and things are just like kind of turbulent, and you know they both, you love each other, but things are just like rough.
Mm. Well, there's several things that contribute to negative sentiment override that really need to
change.
Can
you define it?
So what we mean by negative sentiment override, sentiment is a word that means feeling, right? Mm-hmm. So negative feelings override everything else in the relationship. So you're expecting negative things to happen. You're expecting criticism. You're expecting contempt. You're expecting defensiveness. You're expecting not to be understood. You know, that's negative sentiment override. So you have a chip on your shoulder all the time with your partner.
We're grateful today for emergency responders who take care of people who are in trouble.
Yes, we
true.
Are.
There we go.
Yes, we are. Okay, so to get past negative sentiment override, oftentimes part of what contributes to it is what we call attachment injuries, meaning regrettable incidents that have occurred between partners, a terrible fight, or a very important time when one person needed the other really turned away, being oblivious to the other person's needs, terrible conflict that's been going on and on and on. So one has to take each of those one by one and really address it in the relationship. So if there have been old injuries, really, you know, emotional injuries in the relationship, we have a way in our work to process those as if you were sitting in the upper balcony of a theater looking down on the stage and saying, what the heck happened during Act One? And trying to understand with your partner where your partner was at, what their perceptions were, their feelings, their needs in that given time. Then you express yours as well, and you look at taking responsibility for your own part and how to make it better next time. Dealing with conflict really has to do with learning different ways, as we said earlier, to talk about the problems you're having in ways that don't describe your partner critically, but instead describe your own feelings and what you need. So those are some of the ways that people can shift from negative sentiment override into positive sentiment override.
Beautiful. Thank you.
One of the things about being in that negative place is that you're overly sensitive, like your detectors for negativity are really set very low. So you kind of see it everywhere. You see the put-downs and the insults everywhere. And you don't notice what your partner is doing right. Mm. And, you know, so people are in that place, negative sentiment override, miss 50% of the positive things their partner is actually doing. You know, they just don't notice it. And if their partner goes out of their way to do something positive, they kind of go, you know, what's the ulterior motive here? What's behind this? So it's hard to just get somebody out of negative sentiment override quickly and easily. You can't just change somebody's mind about it. They're there for good reason, because their partner doesn't feel like their friend. Their partner feels like their adversary, their enemy. And so you've really got to do the kinds of things Julie was talking about to get over the emotional wounds that have been created, so that you can start really becoming friends and start becoming intimate partners, lovers again, and be able to play together and have fun and have adventure. And you've also got to be able to, this is what we've learned through research, you've also got to be able to deal with conflict constructively, not by, you know, making it a win or lose situation, but one in which both people can collaborate and win and listen to each other.
I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Julie, you mentioned something, you mentioned responsibility, taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk a little bit more about that? Like maybe mm-hmm. in the context of conflict or the negative sentiment override, or just mm-hmm. why is it important to be responsible and what does that mean?
Great question. So here's what it means. It means acknowledging that none of us is perfect, that we all make mistakes, that we may say the wrong things, we may blurt out something in a heated moment that may really hurt our partner. And, you know, oftentimes in conflicts, part of what people do that's a mistake actually is they apologize too quickly.
Mm.
They'll apologize immediately without understanding the impact of their behavior on the other person. So in the process that we recommend for talking about a regrettable incident, what we're really doing is asking people to listen to each other's perception of what was going on, people's feelings about what happened, how the other person's behavior impacted them, how it may have triggered some old pain. Pain from childhood or pain from earlier life before this partner came along that felt absolutely horrible, just terrible. Once the impacts of the other person's behavior are really listened to and understood and empathized with, then taking responsibility feels much more significant. Because the other person is taking responsibility for the detailed ways of how they have hurt you or impacted you, and you are doing the same with the other. And it doesn't mean that people are malicious, that they're really out to hurt each other, and therefore they have to admit that every single time. A lot of times the mistakes we make are inadvertent or so impulsive that we haven't really been thinking as the words come out of our mouths that hurt the other.
Right.
But taking responsibility is huge, because it means it's giving the partner a message of, I know I'm not perfect. I know I have a lot to learn. I want to be a better person for you as well as for myself. I want to be a better loving partner for you as well as for me. I want to be my best self with you, which means more loving. So here I see the path I need to follow to change, to become better and better and better.
Mm.
That's wonderful to hear as well as to speak.
Thank you for sharing that.
Mm. I've got a pair of socks on that say, let her win, she's probably right anyway.
Oh my
gosh. So that motto.
It's not about winning and losing.
Right.
No. We're on the same team. We're on the same team.
Yeah, but it's a great pair of socks.
Did you hear what he just said? He said, yeah, you're right. That'll work.
So I just want to see if what I'm hearing you say is that the apology itself is less important then understanding why your partner is hurting and what your words or actions have kind of brought up for them.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes, I'm guilty, I'm sure everybody's guilty of this, you just rush to the I'm sorry without saying, before saying I'm sorry, saying tell me the effect that this
tell me had. What you're feeling.
Yeah, that's right.
You need. I had no idea that showing up late made you feel like, you know, late to pick you up for a date made you feel like you were unimportant and that you were being neglected and that I prize work over you and that triggers from your childhood the fact that your dad never spent time with you because he was a workaholic too. And
perfect.
Like showing up 15 minutes
are
late to pick her up.
Are you a therapist? Would you like to do something?
Should I be? Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing that's very important to think about what makes relationships work is really solving the moment. Mm-hmm. And that term, solving the moment, is something that we've taken from, you know, a man we admire a great deal, a man named Dan Weil, who writes about relationships a lot. And what he means by solving the moment is instead of trying to take responsibility for the whole relationship, just think about what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. And what are you feeling and what do you need? And tune into what your partner is feeling and needs right in the moment. So, and that ability, I'm convinced, that ability to wait a beat before you respond. Just take a beat and say to yourself, shut up for a moment and listen, and then respond. Usually when you wait a beat, the next thing out of your mind is, baby, what's going on? You know, what are you feeling and what do you need? As opposed to immediately sort of, you know, there's a counterattack or a defensive response. Mm-hmm. That ability to wait a beat is very critical.
How do you develop that? How do you develop that ability to wait a beat? Because I feel like everything that makes a 21st century romantic relationship work goes against your natural inclinations.
Right.
Like you have to resist the natural impulses of your body.
That's right.
So how do you develop that ability?
Well, it is really a neurological skill. And the secret is breathing. Because usually when you respond quickly, you haven't taken a deep breath. Mm. When you let yourself take a deep breath first, and even a couple of deep breaths, then you immediately get into this place where you're taking in air and you're willing to take in information as well. Okay, and meditation really helps that.
It's hard to talk when you're breathing in, right?
It's hard to talk when you're breathing in, right. So if you take a deep breath, you know, really from the gut, and take a couple of deep breaths before you respond, then you have that ability that engages your brain a little bit, you know, your frontal lobes that can think and plan, and you can say, oh, okay, so she's really upset right now, as opposed to saying, nobody talks to me like that, you know, I'm going to get even with her, you know, or that makes me angry, you know, boy, she's really upset. Breathe, you know, and then you can say, boy, you're really upset, honey. You know, what's going on? What's on your mind? What's happening?
I've been trying something new, actually. I'm pretty good at breathing, but I'm so friggin' reactive that sometimes breathing doesn't do it either. So I've been using a little mantra. So every time I feel that urge to, you know, overreact, I say in my head, patience, just one word, patience, 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 and it immediately stops me. Mm-hmm. So that's been useful as well.
I applaud that.
I bet you do. I bet you really appreciate it.
She's extra
thankful. Do that more, honey.
Why is that, honey? What do you need to do?
No, just a theoretical thing.
Yeah. Scientific.
Testing the theory.
Testing
exactly,
a theory, right.
That's it. But anyway, it really works. Right. It really works. So, you know, just one simple little word that, you know, what you begin to do is you begin to pair together a particular feeling you get in your body. Like, I know my body really well, so I know when I'm about to bite, you know, or claw out at somebody or something, or feel frustrated or feel angry. So I've been working on pairing that physical tightness that I get inside with patience, patience, patience. You know, just saying that. It just immediately reminds me, stop. don't react.
So maybe put those together. Yeah. Like, take a couple of deep breaths and say patience in your mind.
That's
before
beautiful.
You react. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then the natural response is, oh, baby, what, you know, what's going on? You know,
right back to the summary of all your research.
Yeah. What do you feel and what do you need?
You're hurting.
Great
what can
questions.
I do for you?
Right.
Yeah.
Either that or it really is a terrible thing your partner just did and you still have to be mad.
Yeah.
But a little more calmly.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there something in the relationship space now in like the 2016 era that's starting to fascinate you that maybe didn't even, that wasn't a concern for you in the past? Like, is there some sort of relationship trend that you guys are kind of fixating on that's like, oh, this is really interesting?
I am really fascinated by the social networking that's going on now as a potential, and I'm being optimistic here, for a new sense of community. Mm. And I see this with my daughter, you know, that she's connected with this group of friends that she has quite often. And they know what's going on in her life and she knows what's going on in their lives and they provide an enormous amount of support and empathy and almost like a cushion against, you know, all the things that are hard about living. And I see that as a really great potential because community has been declining in America since 1960. You can chart it. Yeah. It's a straight line down. People are more isolated. And I'm hoping that this new trend will unite not only, you know, my daughter and her 10 friends, but really unite people on the planet and make us realize that we're all brothers and sisters and people everywhere, you know, are part of this family of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm excited about.
That's cool.
Hmm. I don't know if I'd say excited. I'm more concerned. So, you know, I'm the worrier in the family, of course, the neurotic worrier. So the thing that I'm really worried about is what's happening to sex. So, you know, in relationships, you know, we have hookups everywhere. So people are not only hooking up before marriage, they're hooking up during marriage with others. And the internet, of course, is, excuse me, is feeding into that with, you know, the vast, you know, billions of people literally who are on porn sites on the internet. And how that is, that we know from some research that's been done, that really impacts people's sexual behavior powerfully.
Yeah.
It makes people look for sex that's superficial, that's impersonal, that is sex that has nothing to do with relationship. It has everything to do with control and power. And sex slavery is all, you know, part of that. So that really, really concerns me, big time. The other thing that concerns me is the rise of fundamentalism in every religion that is rolling back all the progress that my generation of women worked our tails off to make happen. It's rolling it back, big time. Mm. So that in combination with kind of hookups happening everywhere, which devalues the emotional intimacy that makes sex more meaningful, combined with pornography,
mm-hmm.
that is making sex outside of marriages much more available, pornography much more available, you know, etc. It's unfortunately, I think, counteracting the sacred in sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, leading people to have really false expectations mm-hmm. of what sex should be. People start looking for pornographic sex in their relationships instead of intimate sex,
mm-hmm.
personal sex. And that is a problem. I'm seeing that in my clinical work all the time. So I'm worried about that.
And it's a very valid worry to have.
Yeah.
I was talking to a past guest on the show, and she said it's interesting to see the generational change in the value of sex, mm-hmm. and how two or three generations ago, you know, you didn't have sex till you were married. It was pretty socially, that was the social norm. And then, you know, one or two generations ago, it's like you, when you're in a committed relationship, you've gone out, you know, 6, 10, 12 times, then maybe you can have sex. And now the value of sex is eroded to like one carefully worded text. And
incredible.
It's just amazing how that has shifted in those generations. So I would love to, we're about out of time, but I would love to end the conversation maybe talking about what do you see as possible solutions for that dynamic, for pornography or for the erosion of intimacy and sex in modern day relationships. Is there any pointers or tips that you have for
people? Yeah, I think one thing that we've seen, Julie and I have seen in our research, is that when a baby comes into a relationship, people stop talking to each other, they stop romancing each other, they stop courting each other, they stop having play and adventure and fun. And all of those things become the last thing on an infinite to-do list. Mm. And people have to realize that you've got to keep these things going in a relationship. You've got to make them a priority. You've got to ritualize them, making room for the weekly date, saying I love you every day, a kiss goodbye, you know, and a kiss that really has some meaning, and, you know, surprise gifts, and really continuing to court and love one another and enjoy life together. So make that relationship a priority, and don't become either so child-centered or, if children aren't involved, so work-centered that you've really given up all the reasons for living. Mm. And, you know, take care of your own life so that you're not running on empty and your relationship isn't running on empty.
Mm. I think my answer to that, Nate, is people like you. People like you, exactly, who are curious, who are wanting information, who are coming to try to understand what's true and what isn't true. People who are giving to others the truth about relationships, because I think so many people are misled by the media, by, you know, the website developers who are exploiting, you know, their sexual interests, and people don't realize how that stuff is changing them. They don't understand how it's changing them and how it is influencing their future relationships and their future health.
Mm.
Long-term relationships, good love, good connection creates greater longevity, greater health, greater happiness. You know, we all know that, as well as happier kids. So folks don't understand. You know, they're just kind of going for the immediate gratification. They don't understand the impact of the things that are kind of being shoved upon them in the culture that they're now, you know, grabbing hold of. So providing information that helps people discern what is the best choice for them and what isn't. It's a little bit like cigarette smoking. You know, 50 years ago, everybody smoked cigarettes, or 60 years ago, everybody mm-hmm. smoked. They thought it was cool. It was really neat. It really, you know, added to your status. It made you very glamorous, etc. And then, lo and behold, out comes the Surgeon General's report. And then more and more and more information that spreads through the society and shows the myth of that. Shows that, you know, smoking behavior creates horrible addiction, horrible illness, you know, less longevity, cancer, heart disease, strokes, you know, everything. So I'm not saying quick sex produces that. However, it's not going to produce necessarily wonderful, happy, healthy relationships. So giving information, providing truth for people, is, I think, our saving grace. So thank you very much, Nate.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I just really appreciate you guys, your generosity, not only with your research and your knowledge and experience, but with your time. It means a lot to me, and I know it will mean a lot to the people listening to this podcast. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks once again for tuning in. Remember, if you liked this episode, please rate it or review it on iTunes. Share it with your friends. It's one way that you can say thank you to me for doing this podcast. And also thank you to the guests for spending so much time with me and their knowledge and their experiences. I really, really hope that you enjoy this episode and that you come back and listen to it regularly, because sometimes that's all it takes, is a refresher to help you improve kind of what you're up to and how you show up in your relationship. So I hope you have amazing love this week, and I hope you tune in again next week. Bye.